Other horns don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let them play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, the way I see it, following Saturday's throttling of the Wildcats, this year's edition is starting to round itself into shape. Are you with me or not so much?
Man, I think it is slowly coming together. You know, he wants them to continue to improve. He wants them to establish an identity. And I think for the first time this season, they are starting to resemble teams of old and start to create their own identity.
Yeah, I think so. And offensively, it was a record-setting performance, right? 668 total yards. That's the most we've had since 1973 in a game. It's the first time ever that we've had a 300-yard passer and two 100-yard rushers. I mean, those are epic proportions, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. When you look at that 668 yards, you really can't get off of it to any other stat. You know, that just goes to show you that in our lifetime of following football, we've never seen something like that. And it was just nice to see so many formations. You know, it was nice to see the traditional fullback lineup. I mean, we'll jump to offense in a minute, but it was nice to see Jostin Fowler the way we expected to see him at the beginning of last season. Go in there and hit that other linebacker that the guard doesn't take and open up some holes up the gut. It was nice to see them be able to run freely between the tackles.
Yeah, I think that our running game has improved, you know, significantly. And I don't know if it's a coincidence or credit, and I'm probably one to yield more in the way of giving credit, but our running game really seems to have blossomed, you know, in step or in conjunction with Chad Lindsay stepping in at the center spot.
You know, and obviously the level of the opponent, right, is not quite where we – it's hard to make a true gauge right now, right, because Texas A&M was giving up a lot of rushing yards. This was Kentucky. Take nothing away from them, but this wasn't LSU. This wasn't Florida. You know, two of the top defenses in the league this year. But I do think the level of competition – okay, and the fact that Chad's Lindsay is in there and the fact that there is competition at both currently the right tackle and the center position, I think it does help because Chad Lindsay is playing like a guy that doesn't want to give up that spot.
Is he playing better than Ryan Kelly? This is it's not a trick question, but it's nuanced in the way I want to ask it. Is Lindsay playing better than Kelly would have been playing at this point in the season, or is he benefiting by looking like he's playing better because everyone else is coming together and playing better as a unit?
You know, I would say I think he's playing better because there seems to be much better communication at the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
But to be fair, Arie's got a couple games under his belt, right? Playing next to his brother. Anthony Steen is back in there, and he had a whale of a game. And then Austin Shepherd is playing like a guy that knows that Grant Hill is nipping at his toes. So there's a lot of factors at play there. But yeah, this Lindsay kid reminds me a lot of Vallejos. I mean, he really does. He's a gutsy little kid. He's, you know, short in stature compared to your prototypical center. But he knows where to put his helmet. He knows where to place the angle to properly get the, you know, the support he needs to make the block. And we weren't running between the guards like this 3 weeks ago.
No, we weren't. And I would say that if you're going to have a short, pudgy lineman, so to speak, it's going to be at center. And Vallejos maybe was the poster child of that. And you know, Lindsay in some respects certainly, you know, fits that mold. You know, Ryan Kelly was more of the taller, athletic looking, you know, guy that you might expect to see at a tackle position or maybe a pulling athletic guard position. So, you know, I think he's, you know, a central casting type player, and then he has some beef in there. And then I think that he is, it's hard to tease apart. Is he technically playing better than Ryan would be playing, or is it the line all, you know, all together as a unit? I think it's probably a little bit of both. You know, I like, you know, one of the stories, Mark Slaworth, you know, multi-time NFL, you know, Super Bowl champion in the league. You know, he talks about the offensive line playing as a unit. And if the offensive line as a unit is a five-person player, if you will, as a unit, if they run the wrong play, but they all run the same wrong play, it can still be a successful play because they are, even if it's not the blocking scheme that's called to run a play, it's a blocking scheme that is working together in tandem to block the defender. If all of the defenders are being counted for, even if maybe they're blocking the wrong way, the play can still be successful versus, you know, one person missing their block and letting, you know, a blitzing linebacker come through, you know, unattended. So I think it's a little bit of both. And I didn't mean it as a trick question, but maybe it really is a trick question.
Well, I don't think it's a trick question. I do think it's a little of both. But I do say in some of the, especially in the I formation, that there seemed to be most of the running up the middle seemed to be between Steen and Lindsey as opposed to Lindsey and Airy. And I will say that there were numerous times that Steen didn't have to help Lindsey for more than a second. He kind of turned his guys all and he went and picked up the linebacker, which allowed Fowler to come in behind him and take the other linebacker, which we have not seen prior to this game all season. We have not seen the inside trap or the inside run, just straight run, you know, straight dive play be as successful as it was in this one ball game.
Yeah, and if that's something that's going to start to have some success, then that's going to bode well. You know, if you can consistently get players to that second level and start picking on, you know, open out some of the linebackers, you've suddenly got some running lanes there for you. So I think it bodes well for the progress, certainly the offensive line play, but the running game, which I think opens up some of the play action because, you know, we've not been successful running the ball. You know, everything is kind of fit together. And this is why football, I think, is so much fun. You know, everyone says, well, the deep passing is not there. The deep passing is not there because they're playing too high safety. Well, they can get away with playing too high safety because they're stopping the running game. And when the running game starts to work, and they have to pull one of those safety down, one of the safeties down to have another man in the box, well, that's when your play action starts to work. So it can either fortify against you. We can stop you with fewer men, which allows us to also then stop the passing game, or it can spiral away from you. And so we have to take men from the defensive backfield to shore up the line. Well, we can beat you that way too.
That's true. And the other thing I want to point out, besides the competition within the offensive line, this whole finding the five best linemen, right? Which is also nice because unlike last year's team where we were blessed with five starters playing the whole year, right? It was kind of understood who these guys were going to be. Well, I like the fact right now that Ryan Kelly just came back to practice yesterday and now he's splitting time with the ones with Lindsey. And I like the fact that I think Austin Shepherd played the best game in his young career of starting against Kentucky. Okay. I went back and noticed him several times, and I do not recall him getting beat badly on any assignment. And so I think he played the best game that he has played since he started at right tackle. And I think that has something to do with Grant Hill. And the other thing I want to point out real quick about this running game is I don't think we can underestimate the play of Brian Vogler, the play of O.J. Howard, and the play of Brandon Green. Because we talked at the beginning of the season about Michael Williams and not having that one guy. Well, guess what? Brandon Green, he looked pretty nice at the goal line when he knocked the crap out of somebody and Justin Fowler came right behind him and finished the guy at the second level. But then Brian Vogler and O.J. Howard, man, they are lining up in several formations. They are lining up in the backfield. They're lining up tight next to each other at the line of scrimmage. And they're doing pretty well blocking also.
Yeah, that's something that they're certainly getting better at. And I think at that position, you know, maybe running backs, they come in from high school and they don't have to learn how to block because they can, you know, they can run. And I think at tight end, you have to want to block, and you have to at least have a little bit of ability there. And Vogler, I think, has come on. You know, he came in as a pass receiving tight end. That's what we recruited him as. But he's been actually more of a blocker. And, you know, Brandon Green, it's almost not fair to compare him to the tight ends because he was a tackle in fall camp. And so, you know, there's probably not going to be a tight end. You know, I don't want to say he's the best blocking tight end in the country, but I guess I kind of am saying that because, you know, he was a tackle. So yes. in a goal line, short to goal situation, he better be one of the best blocking tight ends around.
It's just nice having him there. It's just nice having him there because of the undersized that Vogler and O.J. Howard and the other guys brought to the table. And as we talked about, he's just getting valuable experience that allows him to – he right now could be one of the five best offensive linemen potentially. So right now we've got seven guys vying for five spots in the game of musical chairs, and he technically could be auditioning right now – for one of the tackle spots on next year's team, because he's trimming down, right? He's getting slimmer. He's having to, because he's splitting wide sometimes. And I just like that we're getting to see him now. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see him as one of the five guys next spring.
That would most certainly be interesting. We'll have to see how that plays out. I don't know if I would go so far as to think that maybe he could come back and be a tackle, but you know, if Cyrus goes and you know, and I know we're talking about the yet to sign, you know, Robinson kid out of LA, or you know, Louisiana, if he's not, you know, everyone's saying pencil him in. Well, we've had guys like that where we said pencil in and it hasn't worked out. And so, you know, I won't believe it until I see it on the collegiate field. And so if we find ourselves scrambling, and maybe one of the JUCOs I've heard isn't going to make it grade-wise, and so if we find ourselves scrambling, yes, he's absolutely in the mix. And this could be some very good playing time that he could parlay into, you know, a tackle position.
Hey, just to, you know, we didn't talk big picture about the game yet, and it was nice to see these guys, and Saban talked about this after the game, and he talked about it in his coach's show. It was nice to see them just, you know, play the next play, right? He's always talking, yep, just keep playing and don't look at the scoreboard. And so he talked to them about South Carolina and how South Carolina got up on them 24-7 and Kentucky came back and made it a game. And it was nice to see that with the two fumbles in the first half, right there at the goal line and the second one close to it, it was nice to see even with that adversity to start the game, we threw 24 points on them in the second quarter. I really enjoyed how we just kept putting the pedal to the metal.
No, I agree. And I, you know, we definitely wanted to work around this topic. It was interesting that, you know, sort of the interview that Saban gave at half, you know, kind of the interviewer talking about maybe a slow start. And I think Saban was right. It wasn't a slow start, and he has spent some time talking about this. We just didn't finish. I mean, we drove the ball down to the 15. We drove the ball down to the 5. You don't just get the ball there. And so we can sit. Now, was it frustrating to not have points? Yes. You know, because we've talked about if we would have, in situations very similar to that, if we kick two field goals there, it's a little bit on edge because, you know, you trip, fall, score a touchdown, and then you're down. And so that's even more so the case if you're getting down there and not putting the points on the board. And so it's frustrating from that standpoint, but it was a fast start. It just didn't materialize in points. And we kept plugging away. And, you know, to go from the frustration of not being able to finish, and there were certainly some drop passes in there, to an explosion of 24 points in the second quarter. You know, that's what we were seeing, the manifestation in the second quarter of what we were really doing in the first quarter. It just didn't yield points.
Oh, sure. And when you look at the drive charts, right? I mean, that first drive, right? That drop pass was huge by Kenny Bell, and then those two fumbles. And then you look at the stat sheet and you're like, wow, field goal, four touchdowns, field goal, and two more touchdowns. I mean, so our first series punt was the only punt of the game. That was just awesome. Hey, what did you think about the use of Christian Jones? He only got the one carry when he lined up in the shotgun next to AJ and TJ. But I like the action of how we were using him. We seem to use him a lot more in the backfield lining up than we have in games past.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I like the versatility that we're demonstrating with him. You know, if we were to line our guys up and think about, you know, who's our most dynamic playmaker at the wide receiver position, I do know that Christian Jones wouldn't have been at the top of my list going into the season. You know, you take an Amari or you take a DeAndre or, you know, Kenny Bell's fast. But Christian brings the speed and explosiveness as some of those other guys, but he just has a raw toughness that honestly I don't think any of our other receivers have. And so it's neat and it's fun to see him used in a lot of different ways. It'll be interesting to see how we develop that package or how we add on wrinkles, you know, to him being in the backfield like that.
Well, you know how we've been talking in games before, how we'd like to see some pump fakes, right? We'd like to see more misdirection. This was the first game all season that I felt like we have maybe we're showing more, maybe we've just worked more in the package. But I guess what I'm trying to say is this is what I wanted to see against Virginia Tech.
Okay. Right.
And the Virginia Tech pregame, we said he's going to throw so much out there with all these toys that he's got in his toy closet that all these teams are going to have to prepare for the rest of the season. Well, we finally saw this unveiled in this game. I mean, there was one time that Christian Jones had lined up to the right of AJ and he got the handoff in the backfield on a sweep. And that was his one carry, 14 yards. Awesome. But then later in the game, he lined up to the right of AJ again and he went out to the right flat. Okay, the blocking, half the right side of the offensive line blocked like they were blocking for a screen to him on the right. AJ fakes it to the right, turns around and then dumps it to TJ, who's dragging out to the left flat with the Lindsey and Airy in front of him on the left side. And so I was like, wow, that is awesome. You sat there and misdirected to the right, pump faked it, and then went back to the left for a big gain. And yep. That's the thing that was key for me. I mean, there was one other play that jumped out where DeAndre White was lined up, you know, in the H-back on the left side. We drag him in the backfield, but we take Vogler, who's lined up at tight end on the left side, and he runs a wheel route to the left side. And I felt like we were doing so much more misdirection in this game than we've done in any games before.
Yeah, I am hopeful that, you know, coming off of some of the successful running that we did as maybe as a concerted effort to try to draw down one of those safeties to open up the top and some more comfort on the offensive line. You know, again, a lot of things that you don't think are connected really are connected. And I'm hoping that these are all kind of conspiring together, you know, to the benefit of our offense.
Hey, what do you think about the we can talk about special teams in a minute, but after the nice punt return we had there where we took the shot from the 42, you know, 42, I think it was, that you and I always like to take a shot when the opportunity presents itself. Were you surprised that he threw that ball up into double coverage to Norwood there at the goal line?
Yes, I am surprised because we don't do that. If you sit and watch any, you know, end of the day highlight reel for, you know, college football, you're going to see a dozen plays like that because it happens. You know, quarterbacks put the ball up and let their receivers make plays, and
we never do.
We don't do that in the same way, right? If he's not open, then we don't necessarily, you know, put the ball up for the receiver to make a play. And so, yeah, I was very surprised that we did put it up. But what was so impressive is that Norwood played that so perfectly. I honestly don't think, and if you go back and you watch it kind of frame by frame, I don't know that Norwood necessarily plays that ball any different if he's out there in the backyard by himself, because he played it, you know, running over shoulder, turned around, jumped, touchdown. And I don't know if he plays that very much different if he's out there by himself. He was so honed in on the ball and not really concerned about the DBs. And he went up and high pointed it, got him a touchdown. You know, it was good to see him get a touchdown, and man, it was good to see him get that touchdown.
It was, and I was happy for him because of who he is, right? Just like, you know, yep, his other big touchdown reception this year. You know, Mr. Possession Receiver, it was nice to see that. I just was surprised at the throw because technically it could have been picked, and it was like we were, you know, we had just had the big punt return. You know, we're at the 43 technically, and we go for it, and he doesn't get the touchdown because obviously he gets tackled at the one, but it was still a – it was still nice because it's just out of our norm. I also just want to point out DeAndre White real quick. DeAndre White is showing me what he was starting to show us in week 3 or 4 last year. He's a mini Chris John Jones, man. He is getting used in a lot of different ways, and he looks pretty comfortable out there.
He really does. He looks more and more comfortable. You know, again, we've talked a lot about him. He's a fun one just to watch continue to develop and, you know, continue to see his role. You know, last, you know, I guess it was the week prior, you know, he went up and, you know, the defender had pretty good coverage and he made a pretty incredible leap and catch. And, you know, kind of tying that back to Norwood and what we were talking about there, I don't want us to be crazy. I don't want us to be reckless with the football, but I don't mind us being at times a little more aggressive with the football. And so let's put the ball out there and trust a receiver, even in traffic, even in coverage, to not all the time, but on occasion, let's put it up there and trust them to make a play. And I think if we take calculated, aggressive stances like that, I think that helps to open up our passing as well.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, the balance on offense was nice. It's nice to kind of look at the, you know, with all these yards, you know, just the balance, which is some of the identity of old teams. You know, I know they're trying to forge their own identity, but let's face it, when you can have 35 first downs, 16 rushing and 17 passing, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's I do like that. I do like that distribution. You know, I want to go kind of, you know, we spent a little bit of time on this. I just want to hit again. You know, Kenny Bell had a couple of drops. Fowler had a couple of drops. Yeldon had a drop.
Yep.
Yeldon, his I think certainly would have gone for a touchdown. I think Fowler's probably would have. Bell would have kept the drive alive, and you know, you get up to 48 points is what we scored. You can't say that every one of these other, you know, situations would have also led to a touchdown, because we would have, if we had scored, you know, 24 points in the first quarter, I don't know that we scored 24 points in the second quarter. And we kind of dial it back. And so, you know, I'm not trying to put together a puzzle where we've, you know, could have scored 70 points, because I don't think we would have scored 70 points, but I think that, and so that was a tangent I didn't mean to go on, but, you know, just talking about the drop passes and the opportunities, you know, especially with Bell and Fowler, you know, it was like, and I read later where AJ made a joke about this on the sideline, and I was, it was in my head, you know, watching the game, you know, did we swap out the spray stickum with, you know, spray, you know, oven cleaner or Pam or something, because, you know, the balls just seemed to get, you know, they had their hands up, you know, pinkies up, thumbs down, and the ball just seemed to get into their body. They didn't catch it with their hand. It got, you know, through their hands and got into their body and off the shoulder pads, and then they dropped. And, you know, they were the kind of catches that these guys make. And so it was, you know, it was kind of inexplicable. You take those and you couple them with the fumbles, and in some respect, it reminded me of, and I hate to be reminded of this game, but it reminded me of the 2010 Auburn game, where things went wrong in such a way that they don't, you know, you can watch 100 games and they don't go wrong in the way that, you know, that, right, that they did in that game. And so in the first quarter and, you know, leakage into maybe the second, there were those types of plays that's like, man, we should have, 14, 17 points right here. And we're just, if we're going to lose to Kentucky, this is how we're going to lose to Kentucky. At no time did I think that we actually would, but if we're going to, this is how. And it was just frustrating. Again, everything else we were doing right. It was just frustrating to see that. And then I just want to call out one more thing on the fumbles. I guess it was Drake that dropped his first, and he laid on the ground after the fumble, and he probably was in no rush to go see Sagan on the sideline. And it looked like Chad Lindsey came and kind of picked him up and said, hey guy, listen, we still got a game. And so I thought that was good to see. And then when Yeldon dropped his ball, the first player to come out and kind of put his arm around him and say, hey, man, it's going to be all right, was Drake. And I thought, well, that's, it was good to, good to see. Again, we talk about his development and hopefully he's demonstrating some maturity. I want to hope that that's what we were observing there.
Well, it's funny, you highlighted with one of your pictures the running backs earlier in the season, right? And they were all lined up holding the football. So Saban said that, he didn't point out which one, but one of those two guys was holding the ball too low on his fumble and it allowed him to, get the ball. He wasn't holding it high and tight and allowed him to get to it easier. And so he was probably guilty of that infraction. That was probably his.
Yes. Hey, I've got one more thing on offense. And, I probably purposely wanted to kind of tuck it away because I just think it's a nugget that hopefully we'll get to see more facets of as the season goes on. But Amari looked like Amari.
He looked more comfortable. He was blocking downfield on several occasions. That one big play on the sideline where he made some good yards after the catch, it was the first time that he felt comfortable putting pressure on that foot more so than we've seen in other games.
Yeah, and I can't remember exactly when this happened, second quarter, third quarter, but he caught a pass, and it was the kind of play that maybe earlier in the season he just would have caught it and just gone on out of bounds. But he tried to make a couple of moves and tried to, quick step around people, and he really wanted to get into the end zone. And sort of in that phone booth athleticism to try to move and juke and jive around people. When he did that, I said, he's back. Now, back 100%, maybe not there, but he mentally is getting back and feeling more like he did last year. And so, that was just a flash, and I look forward to seeing more of that. Because I do think he's a dynamic player, and he is certainly capable of adding something to this offense.
No, I agree, and I wish he wouldn't have gotten tackled at the three because TJ got to pick up the garbage from that. Hey, real quick, a couple more things on offense real quick before we flip the field. Were you surprised that Kenyon Drake came in so quickly on the second series that they rotated from the get-go there?
No.
Our MO's been, third or fourth series. I was surprised that Kenyon Drake came in right there on the second offensive series and he finished the day with, I believe, one more carry than TJ. But I was surprised at when he got inserted into the game.
I hear what you're saying, and it was sort of out of form because he did come in earlier than maybe he otherwise would. I think surprise might be too strong of a word. I think it was more along the lines of we may be subbing early, and I want to get him some reps with the ones. And so I'm going to shorten the leash on the rotation a little bit.
Okay. Another thing I wanted to point out real quick is I was surprised at how long AJ stayed in the game because of how the score kind of, got away from, Kentucky there in the third quarter. I just found it interesting. You and I have talked on other occasions of how when a coach will wave his white flag and just start running the ball, right, and just trying to get out of there, Saban will concur. You want to wave your white flag? I'll call off the dogs. And so as I was watching the game, you know, with Stoops and his new regime, and I don't hold it against Kentucky, right, for not giving up, because, you know, I like having the fight in them. But I found it interesting when Kentucky scored their touchdown after we had made it 31-0. And so we literally had, you know, come out of the second half and AJ's gets the ball for the first offensive series. And, you know, and then when Kentucky scores that touchdown, I kind of felt like Saban said, okay, you want to keep going? It was 31-0. You made it 31-7. Okay, I'll bring the ones back out. We'll keep going till you say uncle. And that's probably not what happened, but it was just kind of funny that's the way I read it.
Well, and we can talk about that touchdown when we get to defense, because that was not scored against starters on defense. I do think, and so whether he was kind of needling back at Stoops, I don't know that I would go quite that far, but I do think that touchdown, if they had punted there, I think we would have seen more subs
right
start to come in. But when they scored that touchdown, Saban seemed to resolve himself that I'm keeping the ones in.
Yes.
If he was teetering, and you know, look, we'll never know. But if he was teetering there, I think that touchdown said, "No, I'm going to keep my ones in. We're going to, you know, get after this a little bit more." And I started to wonder. And you usually can kind of wander your way into, ridiculous comments. But I started to wonder a little bit if he wants to get his ones reps deep in a game, because we're going to need that, you know, and take the LSU game last year where it may have been the only game. Well, I guess A&M the next week, those would have been, for the obvious reasons, the only games that our starters on both sides of the ball played the majority of the game. And, you know, we don't have to over dissect that, but when they're not used to playing so many snaps and then they're playing a lot of snaps, you know, you wonder if part, you know, we want to rotate, we want to keep some guys fresh. I don't know. I don't know if I'm making up dots to connect or, you know, if there's something to that. Maybe he wanted to keep the starters in and give them a few more reps later in the game.
I gotcha. Hey, one other thing real quick. I know we've kind of run long on offense, but I did notice an interesting article this week that addressed that Luke Del Rio was one of four quarterbacks that was on the travel squad.
Mm-hmm.
And the article seemed to imply that Saban has referred to Luke Del Rio as the official third string quarterback. Now, I haven't seen that quote myself, but that, you know, he and Morris and Sims and AJ made the trip. And, you know, that would be interesting if that's the case. And I just wanted to put that out there for the listeners in case they haven't seen it. And for future shows, we can look into this further. But, you know, what does that say about the quarterback situation if Luke Del Rio is truly possibly your third string guy right now?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think if we got into a game situation and look, we've been saying this, you know, for the last couple of years, we know, you know, if AJ goes down, we're in trouble. But hypothetically, what would happen if AJ went down? I don't know that we would play a true freshman. I don't know that we
would. I'm with you.
And so, you know, and I say that with also the understanding that we might. if he's the best option, then we darn well might. I just don't think that we would. I think that we would try to cobble together. What it really does, you know, is it really makes me wonder what in the world is going on with Alec Morris. Because some of the things that we're doing with Blake, and we've, you know, seen some of the kind of read some of this after the fact, is, you know, he played so much against Georgia State and did not do the zone read. And you talked about he could have run for 200 yards, but it came out, you know, in some of the postgame stuff that quite specifically Saban said, give him the regular offense. Let's see him run the regular offense.
Right.
And so that says a couple things, right? That says there's our regular offense and then there's our regular offense, right? where is Saban's heart in terms of this type of scheme he wants to run. It sends that message. But it also questions, if you want to see the backup, who everyone, you know, or at least some of us think who the true number two is Morris on the regular offense. Why isn't Morris out there doing it? And so it just really makes me wonder what's going on. Does he have an injury that hasn't been disclosed? Is it as innocent of, as that? Or is it something different than that? And so I don't think, and so that's kind of a long, that's sort of where my head is on some of this. And so to kind of pull that together, I don't think we see Del Rio play this season. And so I don't think the storyline of him being the number three, I just think that's noise in season. But what's going to be interesting as hell is spring. And then who transfers after spring. Because we've got three true freshmen with Blake and with Morris. And then, you know, what's the kid coming in next year? You know, Cornwell, and he's injured, and so we'll figure that out. My point is we have a lot of guys that are young on the roster, and it will be quite interesting to see how that shakes out. And I'm not rooting for anybody to leave. It's just the nature of that position when you're that far buried in the depth chart, and you typically see teams only play, you know, maybe two quarterbacks a season unless there's injury. It'll be interesting to see how the battle plays out, how everyone kind of goes breathless over it. And this, I think, will be worthy of it. And then who transfers at the end of spring, because there will be, you know, I would say two, you know, definitely one, potentially two.
I gotcha. Hey, who gets your mini game ball on offense?
Chad Lindsey, for all the things that we talked about. I think that if he is not the reason for the improved play on the offensive line, and it's unfair to, you know, unilaterally say he's the reason. He is the poster child for the improvement across the offensive line. So I'm giving my mini game ball to Chad Lindsey.
Awesome. Well, hey, in the same vein, because I wanted to say Lindsey, and I kind of knew you were going to say Lindsey, and so, you know, we have to disagree here some. I'm gonna give it to Brian Vogler. For similar reasons, just because I think Brian Vogler is really, you know, he didn't show up on the receiving stat page, but he had numerous situations where he had to line up in all these different formations, a la Michael Williams, and put a hat on a hat. And I think him and Lindsey might be the top two reasons, you know, why we've really seen a difference in the running game. I think the evolution of the tight end and him becoming more comfortable with being in there and getting more reps is starting to show itself.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. You know, in a game like this, you have a lot of guys, you know, contributing. You have a lot of guys, you know, kind of carving out some niches and roles for themselves. And so, you know, a couple of different ways we certainly could have gone, but those are two guys you can't frown at. And so that's exciting. Let's segue to defense. And then just while everyone's doing that, check us out on secbias.com. Go out there. And I'm a little disappointed. We haven't had anyone go and engage with us in that forum. So I'm going to kind of challenge our group. This is our first paid advertiser, and if we can't deliver back to them some value, it may be our last. So, you know, go sign up for the free membership, engage, ask us your questions there, you know, and just make sure the moderators know that, you know, we sent you there. So we appreciate that. But Tom, talk to us about defense. What stood out to you?
Man, the first thing that stood out to me is just A'shaun Robinson. I mean, I got to start there. I mean, just like you mentioned Chad Lindsey, in the same vein and what Chad Lindsey has meant for the offense, at least that's what it seems like, is what I think A'shaun Robinson has meant for the defense, man. I mean, for him to step in for Pagan when Pagan was banged up and play out there on the end and now being back in the middle, I mean, the boy finished with two sacks, and he is sitting there next to Brian Ivory just really giving us that push up the middle on his two sacks. One of the two, he had a double team. He fought through, beat both of the guys, split the double team and made the sack. I'm just really impressed with this guy and what a great, valuable recruit he has been so far.
Yeah, A'shaun, you know, we talked, last week about you know, the defensive line and just the spark that he's providing, you know, across the defensive line. You know, he finished with 6 tackles, which for, you know, a DT or, you know, nose guard is pretty impressive. He had 2 sacks, you know, one of them was covered, but drew and make the tackle. It is quite impressive how he's performing, to think that he's a true freshman and, you know, he is that productive across an SEC defensive front.
Well, like you said, right, 5 solo tackles, right? And he played inside in this game. You know, we knew he came in with the measurables, and so many times we talk about freshmen can deliver easier at wide receiver and running back, right, than they can at the line of scrimmage. And he's having to learn 2 positions, and he's only a few games into his true freshman season. And I just think we can't underestimate what he has done for this team, given the fact that certain players we expected to step up have not, and he has. And I just think that we would be in a whole different situation right now if it wasn't for A'shaun Robinson.
I do agree with that. And just to kind of, you know, just park on that just for a second, I continue to be amazed at the success that we've had over the last, you know, several years. And then not just on the field, but in recruiting and just stockpiling talent. And every year is more talent stockpiled than the year before. But there's still freshmen that can come in and contribute. And, you know, this year, this year it's Grant Hill and A'shaun Robinson and, you know, Eddie Jackson. And I know that I'm probably leaving someone off the list. And so you go back to last year, it was, you know, Yeldon and Amari and Gino. And you go back the year before, and I don't have, you know, I didn't prepare a list of names, but it's just year after year after year. You know, you can go back to, you know, Julio's first year, 2008, and say, well, the stud freshmen are the best guys on the team because, right, you know, we may be depleted. But you can't say that in 2013. The stud freshmen shouldn't be the best players on the team, no matter how good they are. But some of them just continue to carve out niches and carve out opportunities. It's amazing. And so, you know, and we're doing this kind of while we're parked on A'shaun. We could have done it, you know, other players as well. It's just, to me, it's amazing that, you know, guys still kind of leak through what should be a very established depth chart and find playing time. And frankly, that's part of what perpetuates the machine, right? Is the star freshmen, the star recruits, they want to go because guess what? They're good and they play freshmen.
Well, they don't shy away from competition, right? I mean, these are the guys that are, you know, Dwayne Robertson, he went to Kentucky on signing day at the last minute. You know, Alabama had the number one ranked DL class, and I don't want to go there with competition. I want to go to Kentucky. And so A'shaun Robinson, as an example, could have gone anywhere. Landon Collins could have said, well, gosh, Ha-Ha just went the year before, and he was the number one safety in the country, and now I'm the number one safety in the nation, and I'm going to go somewhere else. But instead he said, I'm going to go there because they're the best. And so I just, you know, we can't underestimate, with the loss of Pagan and with other guys not stepping up yet like we expected them, for his versatility is huge. And I just wanted to start there. I also want to just give a shout out to Darren Lake. Darren Lake had the best game of his Alabama career. And, you know, he finished right next to A'shaun Robinson at 4 solos and 1 assist. And, you know, he's a guy that you highlighted last year that I hope maybe the light's starting to come on a little bit.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, he finished with 5 tackles, and I hope that, which again is a big number for an interior lineman. And he's a true interior lineman. He doesn't, you know, kind of fade out and play defensive end like, you know, A'shaun will sometimes. He's a true, you know, inside body. And, you know, and part of that may be a function of, you know, the way Kentucky was trying to run the ball up the middle some. But, you know, you got to make the tackle when you're there, and a lot of defensive linemen can't. And so, yeah, if the light's flipping for him, he's going to contribute, and Ayshon continues to blossom the way that he has, and Brandon Ivory is developing and showing flashes the way that he has. You know, Pagan comes back to where we expected him to be
at the beginning of the season.
We have the opportunity to be pretty formidable across the front.
Hey, I wanted to touch on Landon Collins, because after we did the last podcast, you know, they had the interview piece, AL.com, where they talked about how him and Gino spent 45 minutes before practice each practice leading up to Georgia State, you know, or leading up to Ole Miss, to, you know, be able to understand the roles and responsibilities of Ha's position at free safety. And when they interviewed Collins, you know, he just said, yeah, I haven't done this in a year. And so one of the reporters just kind of flippantly asked him, he said, okay, so now what do you kind of understand? He said, well, I understand nickel and dime as it relates to the star, as it relates to the money, as it relates to the strong, and as it relates to the free. And I heard that interview and I had to go back and play it two more times. And I said, how flipping awesome is that? That this dude, who's a five-star stud, is now versatile at four positions in our secondary. And so just like with Ayshon, right? I don't think we can underestimate what Landon Collins is doing for this defense.
No, I agree with that. And what it does is, you know, it shows he has a head on his shoulders, you know, in addition to just the athleticism. And we hope that all the guys do, and sometimes they don't. And so it really, you know, suggests that he does. And it suggests that he is carving out for himself an opportunity to be invaluable, you know, in a way similar to what Vinny is doing. Just can't take Vinny off the field. You just can't. And so what if we have, and so he's a dynamic playmaker, he makes splash plays, and he's being considered for All-America, you know, and you can't get him off the field, and we'll play a converted high school linebacker at a single high safety because that's how comfortable we are in him, you know, maybe being athletically slow, but being, you know, football fast. And so he's going to be a couple steps ahead of the play because he reads it, and we can trust him to do that. And so he can't find the sideline because of what he brings to the field. And you take Landon trying to become that indispensable with the athletic upside that he has.
Yes, because he is just going to get, you know, better and better at the position.
Yeah.
Going back to Ayshon for just a quick second, just for the listeners, I do want to highlight when we talk about him getting six tackles on the day, he had more tackles combined than Pagan, Stinson, Ivy combined.
Yep.
And so, you know, he had more plays by himself than everybody else on the front defensive line combined. And so that's why we made such a big deal about that. Because he had numerous double teams. I mean, numerous double teams in that ball game.
Yep.
And so what else jumped out at you on defense? What did you think of Sylvie getting the start?
Yeah, you're reading my mail over here. You know, I was wondering, you know, because I saw Eddie, you know, a little dinged, but he kept playing against Georgia State. And so I didn't think that much about it, but then – you know, a couple of press reports, you kind of start to wonder. And so, you know, of course I was watching it live, but then I was taping it and T-bone at the same time. And so I quickly fell, you know, a couple minutes behind because, you know, I was trying to go back and see, you know, that is, yeah, let's watch this again. And, you know, and so I think Eddie Jackson was a little dinged up. He's going to be okay. And he's going to be back. But what's exciting is, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I needed to be talked off the ledge about our safety positions. We seem to have, and how many times, Tommy, would that last all season? But we just sort of recycled our group. And so, okay, well, we're going to put this freshman out here who's developing. You know, Ballou's going to come back, and he's going to be okay. And then, you know, Sylvie, who's been further down the list, you know, who's behind a Fulton, he fell behind a Cyrus. And yes, frankly, if you take a wide receiver and move him over to defensive back, and then he's your third, you know, he's your third corner, everyone else that he jumped over, you know, kind of is, you know, guilty by association, right? And so I had been a little bit dismissive of Sylvie because he had been passed over by four. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, because he had been passed over in such a frame. And so now all of a sudden, you know he's one of the fastest guys on the team, but now all of a sudden he's performing well at the cornerback position. So, you know, I have to wonder, you know, what someone like a Jabril Washington's thinking, you know, because he's kind of been passed over in spades. And he, you know, even as everyone was sort of cycling and recycling above him, he never really got into the fray. He never got even into that fray. And so you have to wonder what's going on, you know, with him. But, you know, if you have a Ballou and then Eddie's going to come back and now you've got a Silve, and then, you know, Geno Smith is still the same dude, right? And so, you know, he's in the mix as well. Well, all of a sudden, that's maybe four corner type. When a couple of weeks ago, we were wondering if we had two.
Well, I like the way they're using Geno. He just, you know, we talked about it a week ago, and bringing him in and those dime packages, man, it's just nice. It's nice having him as the sixth DB right now.
Yeah. You know, this cornerback, you know, it's like the movie Airplane, right? You know, I picked a bad week to stop, you know, sniffing glue. Well, I picked a bad season to track DBs.
Right.
No, if you didn't know their names, none of this would have bothered you. You just said, oh, well, you know, you would have blamed the A&M game solely on Manziel. Not anyone can beat necessarily, not anyone not being good. You would have blamed it on Manziel and then said, oh, well, we're not playing him, so everyone's as good as they always have been.
Yeah.
And that's not true. That's not true, because there's been a lot of permutations. If you're not paying attention, and all you're looking at is, you know, the score and the offense, then, you know, you didn't have all the turmoil that I had in tracking everyone's names.
Right. No, that's true. Hey, I also want to mention, and that's why we do what we do, by the way, right?
Oh,
because we,
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Because we just get in, you know, we just get focused on some of these fine details. This is why we love what we do. But I also wanted to mention that Vinny is still spending about half his time in the back of the defense with Landon in this current setup, and it's allowing Jarek Williams to be the guy who is blitzing from the edge, you know, in the star position. And he seems to be getting more comfortable in this role. You know, he had a nice sack in this ball game. And this, you know, as far as the wow factor, this is the best game of his career so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's kind of two things. He's getting more comfortable in the role, but he's getting more comfortable in this expanding role.
Yes.
Because when we rolled him out there at the beginning, we limited his menu. We limited his plate, and he wasn't blitzing because we didn't want him to think about that. We wanted him to think about it. And so now here he is, you know, blitzing and getting a tackle for loss and getting a sack and you know, contributing to the staff sheet, in that way. You know, he had five tackles as well. And so he's comfortable on the field, and he's getting more and more comfortable in what is a growing and expanding role. And so it kind of goes back to his role expands, and so that allows us to do more things. You know, Ballou is back, and he's taken away a half the field or the opponent's best receiver. And then Landon is learning all of these positions, and that allows us to be more multiple. And Vinny, you know, he knows everything, and I don't mean that negatively. He's a good son. He knows it. And so that allows us to be multiple, and literally it becomes kind of multiple on top of multiple. Because if you can do six things, but I can only do one thing, then you can only do one thing. But if you can do six things and now I can do three things, well, now we can really start to, you know, interworking, you know, parts, intermingle parts here. That's where we really start to be multiple, is when more of the individuals can do more than one thing.
And maybe it's, and you're right. And maybe it's just finally stocking that cupboard, right? Because maybe, because your comment you just made, when I look at past defenses, there's always been a couple guys that we are counting on, right, to fill up the stat sheet. And so this might be the first time I can remember, because we played the ones a lot in this game. So granted, it was an easy victory. But when you look at this defensive stat sheet, okay, and if you and I at the beginning of the season would have said, we are going to sit here in the middle of October, and the final stat sheet is going to be C.J. Mosley, 7 tackles, Ashawn Robinson, true freshman, 6, Darren Lake, 5, Jarek Williams, 5. We haven't even mentioned Hubbard. We haven't mentioned DePriest, right? We haven't mentioned Pagan. We haven't mentioned Ed Stinson, right? I mean, we would have never guessed those kind of names.
No, I would have wondered, you know, who got hurt, you know, who's injured.
Yes. And so that's
now,
the thing.
You know, now Ha-Ha's out, and, you know, he would have had tackles. And so we know that circumstance, but, you know, I was high on Gino, and certainly, you know, we were high on Pagan and you know, some of the other guys. So yeah, I would have wondered who was hurt.
I just wanted to mention that real quick, because I think it allows guys like CJ, right, to be so much better when, I mean, let's face it, right? He's capable of 10 tackles, but maybe we've got so many guys, you know, coming on here that he can't get to the ball carrier quick enough, so he can only finish with 4 solo tackles.
Okay.
I'm just right. trying to, you know, I'm putting my positive spin on this. Hey, who's I'm going to just go ahead and tell you my mini game ball on defense is Darren Lake. For all the reasons we mentioned, you know, I'm just excited for the kid that he can finish so high on the stat sheet. And if he can come on with Ivory and Ashawn, then that can be a nice rotation in the middle of the defense.
Hey, I love your anxiousness there. You just jumped right into mini game ball. That's awesome. I just had a couple of things I wanted to hit on defense. Unless I'm done, I don't know.
Go right ahead.
But, you know, we held them to 170 yards total offense. You know, that's less than a third of our offensive production. They were 2 of 12 on third downs. I mean, some of the stuff is just stifling. And here's a stat that I mean, it's true, right? Because we had shut out and we only allowed, you know, the field goal to Georgia State. And so I see the connective, you know, sort of tissue on this, but to say it out loud, we allowed our first touchdown since the A&M game. That just sounds impressive, right?
It does. It does.
The A&M game feels like it was so long ago. And to think that against Kentucky in the third quarter, basically that's the first third quarter touchdown they've scored all season, which is a, you know, useless trivia deal. But to think that that's the first touchdown we've allowed since A&M, you know, that's pretty darn impressive. And I'll say this, and apparently I didn't include this quite in my notes, but we're ranked number, I think we're ranked number 1 or 2 defensively in the SEC. And I think we're in the top 5 defensive nationally. And I may not have those exactly right. My point is scoring defense. We're first in the SEC and 2nd nationally with an average of 11.3, which that all by itself is pretty darn impressive. But if you take away those points that A&M scored.
Yeah, considering the Texas A&M game, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, our defensive, you know, if you look at the opposition scoring points, our opposition scoring points looks like a snake who swallowed a big egg, because it's thin, 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 and then it's bloated and ugly, and then it's all thin, thin, thin again. So,
sure,
That's my bad analogy on it.
That was a bad analogy, but we've only given up 26 points, right, over five games versus the 42 points that we gave up against Texas A&M, which we know why that happened. Hey, what else did you have on defense?
You know, and you hit on this, but the Mosley report, you know, seven tackles, and he was the player of the week. He was one of our defensive players of the week again, which so far this season, he has been a defensive player of the week for us every week of the season. And I was tracking this most of last season, and I didn't bring it out in a show, and I kind of stopped tracking it, but he was the defensive player of the season almost. And I always say almost because I'm not 100% confident, and I don't want to say all, but he was a defensive player of the week for us almost every game last year too. And again, you could look that up and it could be wrong because he could have been for every game last year too. And so that's just a guy that is just getting work done. And so I want to highlight that in the Mosley report. And then my mini game ball, and I'm kind of torn between two guys. I like the play of Bradley Sylvie, but I think I got to go mini game ball while he can still accept this with Jarek Williams. And we've talked about his performance, and he's just growing into an expanding role, which I think is exciting and bodes well for our defense.
Absolutely. Hey, give us some special teams talk, man. What do you think
Chris John Jones decided to make everybody know he was
still around on that big punt return?
Yeah, that was nice. That was good to see. I'm glad to see, you know, him break one. I think he's a guy that he is gaining more and more confidence, not only just in his athleticism and his ability to perform on the field, but his confidence is growing in response to the confidence that the coaching staff is showing in him. He is, you know, it's one thing to go out there and perform and say, hey, look at that. And it's another thing for the coach to really, you know, high praise and view an expanded role and sort of the leadership and authority that comes with that. And I think that's sort of the interpersonal growth that we're seeing from him. And I look forward to seeing him perform, you know, and continue to perform well on special teams. A lot of his success at the capstone originated, you know, him getting on the field in special teams.
Hey, what'd you think about Cade, man? You got to give Cade a little love. He showed that he can be a short yardage field goal kicker.
You know, he was 2 for 2 on field goals and 6 for 6 on extra points. And, you know, he's knocking them through the uprights, and it's not the prettiest thing. And he almost approaches the ball with kind of a bow-legged, you know, kind of wobble up to the ball, which, you know, if you think a bow-legged wobble, you're not thinking kick straight. And so I think the visual fits, but you know, darn if he's not hitting them true. So, you know, keep that up. We'll keep heaping on the praise if he's going to keep knocking them through.
Hey, anybody else jump out at you on special teams?
You know, it's just another one of these stats that you read and you kind of have to scratch your head and say, is that real? But, you know, Cody Mandel had one punt for 47 yards.
Yep.
His average on the season is 46.8.
Wow.
He is ranked number one in the SEC. This is where I was getting my numbers crossed a minute ago. He's ranked number one in the SEC and number five nationally in average punting distance.
Man.
And that's just, I just need like a moment of silence around that, right? I mean,
sure.
Wow.
Yeah. That's no, what I got. Now. I mean, no, that's awesome. Just to think that we have an Alabama punter who ranks fifth in the country when we were wanting to have all open auditions on the quad just a few years ago.
Yeah,
speaks volumes.
Same guy, right? Yeah. So, and you know, I read someone say that, and this was just someone's opinion, but, you know, they thought maybe he was the best punter that we've had, you know, maybe ever had. And I don't know. I guess maybe I have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I
don't know if we can go there, but he definitely, I mean, to be sitting here at a, you know, he kicked for his average, right? He kicked 47 yards. And
yeah,
for him to, you know, just you know, we've talked in previous podcasts about his maturity and what he has done to consistently just get better and better is awesome, for sure.
Right, right. No, that's cool. Anything else special teams you want to hit, or you want to go to predictions?
No, I'm ready to do some predictions, man.
All right. Well, the Hogs of Arkansas, what do you think?
You know, it's
you
just
see what I did there? Did you see what I did there calling the Hogs?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I will quickly say back to Cade Foster, we do have to give him some love that he did have some touchbacks on kickoffs. And so he had a well-rounded performance for him. But no, this is a different Arkansas team, right? You know, with Wisconsin's head coach coming to the SEC and bringing the smash mouth running game that we saw from Arkansas teams years ago. You know, it's hard to put a finger on this team because, you know, they're winless in the SEC. You know, they play a Texas A&M team and, you know, they get 33 points on them, but then they can only put 10 on Florida. And then they it's still a respectable score at Florida. And then they get pounded by South Carolina, you know, at homecoming. I mean, 52-7, you lose your homecoming game to South Carolina. And so I didn't.
And they lost to Rutgers in there as well. And I can't remember the final on that one.
28-24.
Yeah, there you go. And so they're putting the points, you know, I think the dichotomy that you point out that they scored so many points against A&M and it could only muster 10 against Florida. To me, that really speaks to they run the ball. And if you can stop the run, you can shut them down.
Yes.
To me, that's what I get out of hearing those two things. Because we know A&M's defense is suspect, and certainly they're prone to giving up the run. And in Florida, you know, for all you could want to say about them, especially early in the season when they had the Easley kid that was still in there, they were a physical, stout defense. And so the score, the Arkansas point total in those two games. And so if I had to say, is our defense more like one or the other, I think we've got a pretty stout defense.
No, we do. And, you know, I think I heard the stat that in the South Carolina game, they only had 35 yards of pass yards of total offense, that of their total offense, 35 yards came passing. And so I don't have in front of me the distribution of that game run, you know, number of plays, but you know, they are way slanted to the run. And, and so I think this could get pretty ugly for them. You know, last year, obviously the final score was 52-0. And, which at Arkansas, you know, you and I didn't, that was not our prediction going into that ball game.
We were
very surprised by that score. I would think things line up for them now. You know, like you said, if Florida beat them 30-10, you know, we've got a more prolific offense than a Florida. And a similar defense, you know, this could be a score like we just saw last week with Alabama.
Yeah, are you pegging that one high 40s to below 10 or what? Where are you going number one?
I really think that we could be looking at a 48-6 kind of ball game here.
Wow. Okay. I'm not going to go quite that. They're going to zig on this one instead of zag. They're going to run the ball. But I think that we're going to line up on our base defense, and I think they're going to take some shots. I don't know necessarily that they're going to connect on them, but I think they're going to try to come out of the mold a little bit. And so I would say that's something just to watch. But I attempt to run the ball, And that's going to have an effect on the clock, which I think is going to impact the game, you know, the totals a little bit. I'm looking at a 38-7 style ball game. That's in line with what you're saying. I just think the top end comes off the point total.
Okay. Well, it definitely is setting up nicely for us. Just the style of play that they're bringing to Tuscaloosa, and especially with us highlighting the middle of our defense and what an A'shaun Robinson has brought to this defense after the loss of a Jesse Williams. I definitely feel better about them coming to Collin with their rushing game now than maybe I would have a few weeks ago, not knowing what we had yet.
I agree with that. I agree with that. And so that's something that, you know, we can feel better about that. And what I saw someone write on this and you know, got just some disagreement for it, but I think it's spot on. I think this is a proxy for how we can stand up against a stout running game, you know, kind of a la LSU. Now, LSU, I think, has some, they're a little more multiple and they can pass the ball, which kind of brings some play action into bear. So it's not a one-for-one kind of equation. But if Arkansas is going to try to pass the ball a little bit and they're going to do their stout run, this is like a broke man's LSU. Is what we might see here. And so, you know, I guess that means it doesn't mean anything, but it'll be interesting to see how we do against the run.
I would hope that we can stop the run right better than South Carolina. And I pulled this up because I was curious. Arkansas finished the game at 9 yards a carry on 24 rushing attempts for 218 yards. And yet they still only controlled the ball 16 minutes time of possession. They allowed South Carolina to get 537 yards of offense in that ball game. And South Carolina rushed for almost 300 yards.
I can't even fathom only possessing the ball for 16 minutes.
Well, that just speaks volumes that they had 30 yards passing. They had 248 yards total offense, but that you can still, you know, you can average 9 yards a carry on 24 attempts and only have the ball for 16 minutes.
Well, they're going to be fresh, right? I mean, if they only possess 16 minutes, they're going to be fresh this week.
This could set up to be a really long day for them, for sure.
Yeah, it definitely could. Well, you know, as you know, and probably the listeners at this point know, and are probably even annoyed by, I am taking this call from inside of a tin can, so I don't have access to my iTunes to kind of look up some of the feedback and reviews that we've gotten. So I'll have to catch up on that. But we have gotten some 5-star reviews. I think we're the last count that I saw, and so hopefully the next count I see is higher than this. But the last count I saw was 31. So I want to put the message out that, you know, we still want to get up to 50 by the end of the season. So we appreciate your reviews. Go to iTunes and give us an authentic review there. And then the last I checked our email, I didn't have any traffic, but I don't know if you pulled that up and there's been any interaction out there.
We just
had one email from Justin. Justin just mentioned,
as you know, he just mentioned that he lives and works in the belly of the beast, as he calls it, Washington, D.C. He just mentioned that having this kind of access for those that don't have the benefit of local Alabama stations is greatly appreciated. And he just said we were the best source of comprehensive, in-depth analysis of Tide football. And so we appreciate Justin shooting us an email our way.
We do, but Justin needs to spend less time on podcasts and less time on email and more time straightening things up in D.C.
Yes, man. He's got to work on this government shutdown.
Absolutely. Or maybe that's why I have so much time. I don't know.
Exactly. Well, hey, man, I enjoyed it, and looking forward for a similar score from this week's game.
Absolutely. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.